I'm very happy now to welcome Sara Del Valle. She's a mathematical epidemiologist, and Nicholas Generous, who is a molecular biologist, both at Los Alamos National Laboratory. They're part of the mathematical and computational epidemiology team. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
So your group is using tools for collecting data about infectious diseases that are fairly new and are made possible by online searches about the diseases you're looking at, specifically Wikipedia searches. First of all, let's talk a little bit about epidemiology. What kinds of data do epidemiologists and mathematicians like you guys want to collect, and for what purpose?
Well, we want to collect different types of data that can tell us a little bit more about what people are doing in response to epidemics, and also how we can monitor epidemics in the general population. So we've been collecting data from different internet sources, such as Twitter, Wikipedia. We're also looking at Google. And they all kind of provide different types of information. Twitter, for example, it's a lot about what people like to share, whereas Wikipedia tends to tell us a little bit about what people don't like to share. For example, if someone has a sexually transmitted disease, they're not going to go on Twitter and announce it to the entire world that they've just been diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease. However, they're very likely to go on Wikipedia and search for whatever, you know, chlamydia or syphilis or HIV. And so these different systems are providing different kinds of information. But Twitter is also very good at telling us about what people are doing in response to epidemics. So, for example, if people are afraid of getting the vaccine because they think there's something on the vaccine, then it's very likely that people are going to go and share that on Twitter. But other things such as wearing face masks or mosquito repellent to avoid infection, that those are the kinds of things that you would find there. So that's why we're kind of looking at different types of data. But one of the most important pieces of data that we collect is public health data from different departments of health around the globe, and they can help us validate what we're collecting through non-traditional internet systems.
Traditionally, a lot of public health practitioners, what they do is they collect information on the cases of a certain disease or whatnot. And the idea basically is you just want to know how many people are sick in your district and your jurisdiction so you can monitor the levels of health, and if it increases rapidly, that's essentially what an outbreak is. But the big problem with that type of data is that it can take weeks to get your hands on because it's a very bureaucratic reporting process. So, you know, you go to the doctor diagnoses you with pneumonia, with measles, with influenza, then he reports to the county reports to the state eventually gets it to the CDC, then that data is then pushed back out for people to see. That whole process can take anywhere from a week to 2 weeks in the U.S., which is a very well-developed country in terms of health infrastructure, but even longer in other countries that may not have as good health infrastructure. And that's what's so exciting about this internet data is that people are leaving traces of their health in the articles they're searching, in their tweets that they're making, that we can actually monitor and get that data in near real time, in an hourly basis, as opposed to having to wait weeks for data. And when you're dealing with an outbreak, time is of the essence. And if we can actually identify the outbreak happening quicker than it's traditionally being reported, we can actually make interventions more available more quickly, thus hopefully mitigating and stopping the outbreak before it could happen.
So let's say you've got some remote part of the world where you don't have a well-developed public health infrastructure. You still have people tweeting and looking things up on Wikipedia?
Yes and no. For countries with limited internet penetration, it's always a difficulty to get internet-type data. But ideally, you want to complement with other types of sources, such as cell phone data and newspapers and other sources of that kind of data. In one of our papers that we published, we showed that countries with limited internet penetration are still a challenge for us because we can't get a lot of data.
But it's not entirely inconceivable that people are searching their health. This field is still in its early stages, early years, and it's still the Wild West. And internet penetration is increasing, and increasing everywhere all over the world. And it's not unlikely that in the near future, 5-10 years out, when the internet penetration is a lot higher, that we can make much more effective systems that can leverage this internet data to monitor what's going on there.
So the idea is when somebody gets sick, they look it up. And I have to say, that's true for me and for most people I know, although there are probably some real age and demographic variations.
Yeah, so We have been looking at different types of internet sources so that we can also hopefully capture different demographics. But yes, people tend to go online and not only look for the disease that they think they may have, but mainly treatments and symptoms. So if you have a fever and cough, then maybe you search for those terms and then you can try to figure out what kinds of treatments you can use. And it's interesting to see that different types of demographics use different systems. So Twitter, a lot of younger people, but Google tends to cover a larger demographic. And also Wikipedia also covers different types of demographics. The idea is to cover different demographics by looking at different systems.
So you can tell what people are looking up. People are looking up HIV, or they're looking up the flu, or they're looking up athlete's foot or festering boils. But can you tell where they are?
Yes, we can. Currently, well, it depends on the type of internet data we're using. So for Google, you're able to get a fairly local level, usually down to the metropolitan or state area. Twitter, there are methods to geolocate the data down to a lower area as well. Wikipedia is a little bit trickier because currently you can get the page views for each of the Wikipedias, but only by that language in that Wikipedia. So for example, you can get all the flu page views in the English Wikipedia, all the flu page views in the French Wikipedia, so on and so forth for all the various language Wikipedias. So one of the tricks that we had to do to get around this, because you can't, you know, people speak English all over the world. How do you know where people are looking from?
Yeah, it could be South Africa, Pakistan,
exactly.
Kansas.
So we at first looked at countries where languages are very geographically isolated and located. So think Polish and Thai. Most Polish speakers are in Poland. Most Thai speakers are in Thailand. So we were pretty confident that the page views coming from the Polish Wikipedia and the Thai Wikipedia were predominantly from those countries, and we're able to cross-compare those page views and whatnot for the different diseases to the actual public health records in those countries and find that there was a correlation between those two. Other ones get a little bit trickier. So we looked, one of the big kind of unexpected findings was that the English Wikipedia correlates very, very well with the United States. So well that we're actually able to start using the English Wikipedia to do predictions of flu in the U.S. as part of a contest with the CDC.
Does that mean that the bulk of English language Wikipedia users are in fact in the United States?
It seems to suggest that. We haven't done a comprehensive study that can confirm that, but it seems to suggest that a large amount is from the U.S., so much so that we can use that data to represent the U.S.
In fact, Wikipedia provides the number of people that access their different Wikipedia articles around the globe, and about 40% of the English traffic comes from the United States, so that actually confirms our belief that we can actually use Wikipedia to forecast disease in the United States. But Spanish is a tricky one, because 20% of the traffic comes from Mexico and the other 20 comes from Spain, so they're very close together. And so we couldn't, if we wanted to do a study using Spanish as a proxy, we wouldn't really be able to differentiate where the traffic is coming from.
Right, right. Now, are there privacy issues? I mean, how is it that you have access to this data, and how closely is it? Like, if I look up chlamydia, do you know that it's me?
No, there's no way that we know it's you. And it's not that we have access to the data. The Wikimedia Foundation, which runs Wikipedia and a bunch of other similar projects, releases this data for everybody to see. And so, yes, there is this issue of privacy when dealing with that. And obviously, we do not want to get down to the level where you can actually trace exactly who's searching what. That's not right. But if you can maintain balance by, say, looking at a larger geographic area. So say instead of looking at an individual level, we look at a state level. I think that privacy is protected in that case, and that the information gained from allowing that data to be parsed out at the state level would actually be very beneficial to public health officials.
So yeah, the Wikimedia Foundation is very concerned about privacy, and for those reasons, they release only aggregated counts right now at the language level, and so therefore no one really can disaggregate. But we are working with them, and we're trying to see if they can provide lower resolution level, a country level at least, state level. And there's a lot of ways to preserve privacy of individuals, and one of their main focuses is to preserve privacy, because they know that Wikipedia is a public kind of service. A lot of people go and edit their articles and provide free information, and they want to payback by maintaining the privacy of the searches.
So let's go back to epidemiology and how it's used. Like, let's say you want to know about a flu outbreak. So you've got the first choice, which has been traditionally used, which is public health officials, doctors, county bureaucracies, state and federal bureaucracies. Now you've got this other tool, which is people doing internet searches. How do you actually use it? What does it tell you? How does it compare to these traditional methods? And how can it be used?
It's a lot more rapid, so we can get the data almost hourly. And so what essentially we were doing is we looked at all the pages we thought were related to disease. So I'm going to use influenza as an example. So we looked at all the flu-related page, the influenza symptom, influenza virus A, influenza virus B, adamantine, which is antiviral. And we took all these articles and we built time series of how many views they were getting per day. Sometimes we aggregate it per week depending on the data granularity we had from the public health officials. And the idea was that we wanted to correlate the two and see if they matched. And so we took the 10 best kind of fitting, and they fit very, very well, Wikipedia articles related to influenza. And then we built a model from that. And then basically what that's doing is that we're training these models to look at the Wikipedia pages and make, I guess, what we call nowcasts or estimates of what the disease level are currently based off the internet data that will correlate very well with the amount of influenza-like illness in the United States. So we can train that to different metrics. So we can look at influenza-like illness, which is the predominant way that they measure flu in the U.S., but we could also look at notifiable cases of a certain disease. So something like dengue fever or dengue hemorrhagic fever, which we did use in different countries.
But our ultimate goal of using these systems is to forecast. And I think that is the difference between existing systems and our approach, is that current systems from public health or traditional data, they tend to just give you what's going on right now or even what's going on in the past. But we want to use different types of data and internet data to forecast. And actually, we have been able to show that we can forecast up to a month in advance or even more for different diseases. And I think this is very powerful because it can not only educate the public about what's going on in their communities. People can take precautionary actions if they know that there's a flu outbreak in their community, or if there's chlamydia, or if there's, you know, West Nile virus. And they can take precautionary actions, and also public health officials may be able to utilize resources better so that they can have available resources to mitigate the spread, and when people come into the hospitals, they may have the resources to treat and hopefully save more lives.
Now, how is it that this tool allows you to forecast?
So, well, there's various reasons why we can forecast. One is, as Nick was just mentioning before, there's this two-week lag in the public data that we collect from traditional sources. And in addition to the lag, it seems to us that people go online before they actually go to see the doctor. And therefore, we are able to track what's going on in the population before they even go to the doctor. And this type of behavior allows us to forecast, because we see them today, and then a week later, or several weeks later, they will show up on traditional systems.
And so many people don't go to the doctor.
There's that whole segment of the population that doesn't get captured by the official reporting schemes when they go see the doctors, which do when they search on the internet.
Very interesting. We're talking to Sarah Del Valle and Nicholas Generous of Los Alamos National Laboratory about internet tools for studying and forecasting diseases and epidemics. Now, do you only focus on infectious diseases? I mean, I saw in your paper there's also some non-infectious diseases like cancer that people are looking at and that come up as part of these searches.
Some people have... We limited the scope to infectious diseases for our first study because that's our primary of interest and research, but we think that there's definitely a lot of potential in other diseases. And, you know, cancer is definitely one of them, and I think there's been some other work done in that, but what I'm particularly interested in are diseases that aren't captured very well by current public health surveillance systems. So one great case in point example of that is mental health. How do you track mental health? It's not as quite clear as a binary. There's not like a diagnostic test that you can take a blood sample and, oh, you have depression. It's this disease that's a spectrum, and it comes and is obviously heavily seasonally influenced. And there's no very good way to monitor or track something like depression or other various anxiety-related mental health issues currently existing. Something like the internet, and there's been some work on this that seems to suggest that it might be possible, but you could monitor the levels of depression in a population. And once you start looking at mental health at that scale and that issue, we can start, I think, coming up with better ways of treating it, or at least making people aware of the resources available.
But even other diseases such as bulimia or diabetes, I think we could also use Wikipedia or other internet systems to track those.
Now, there are illnesses like the flu, which comes on quickly and spreads easily through airborne means. Then there's HIV, which spreads through fluids and usually has a longer incubation period. I mean, those are very different kinds of epidemics. How are your data different for those two different kinds of things, for example?
Well, actually, in one of the papers that we published, we showed that internet systems seem to work best for diseases that come quickly and go quickly, such as flu and dengue. But interestingly, we seem to be able to capture diseases that have very long incubation periods, such as tuberculosis or HIV. But the trick is that you cannot just look at a very short period of time when you're looking at data. We were looking at 3 years worth of data from Wikipedia. And for diseases such as HIV, you need decades in order to see the patterns and track what's going on in different populations. And I think that's the trick. The trick is looking at different periods of data to capture them.
So one of the things that's interesting about this method is that it's relatively low cost, if I understand correctly. In other words, it costs your time, but you can find out a great deal about a lot of different areas in the world through looking at these searches, whether they be Wikipedia or Google or Twitter or whatever. How does that affect their use in poorer regions or countries?
Well, that's something I think where this technology has the potential to be transformative. It's great that we can now cast and forecast flu in the United States, for example, but we already do that fairly well. Can we take these methods and techniques and deploy them to places that don't have the resources to have traditional health and public health surveillance systems? And in those cases, I think it might be possible to create a low-cost, yes, probably not as high quality as a traditional system, but when there's no other alternative, I think it can provide a crutch that could be very, very powerful for public health in those countries.
And I think the really good thing about Wikipedia is that they provide the data free of cost. And whereas Twitter, we are collecting 1% of Twitter free of cost, but if we wanted to get a hold of the 99%, we would have to pay a lot of money. And so I think for that reason, we're kind of leaning towards using Wikipedia more, even though we're also using other internet systems to capture different types of information. And I just want to say that also this type of research is being funded by the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, because they're very interested in finding methods to mitigate the spread of diseases around the world.
It's interesting also, I mean, Wikipedia is a phenomenon that, 10, 15 years ago didn't exist at all. And now it's this huge, and we've talked about this before on this program, self-organizing system. Twitter didn't exist a few years ago. Now gazillions of people use it. And we have no idea how much people will use these systems in the future, but it's likely that people who have no access now will have access in the future. Do you have any sense of how these methods could develop globally?
So that's one of the tricks, and that's what we're trying to do, is to create extensible systems. Right now we're looking at Wikipedia, Twitter, Google, but we are just building the foundation that can be transferred and used by different types of data, by different types of people. And we know that some systems come and go. You know, MySpace used to be very popular, and now it's pretty much dead. But if we have a robust infrastructure that can take any kind of data, then even if something else comes in the future, that we may be able to plug it in and still continue to monitor and forecast diseases.
I think the important element is that you're right. If you tie anything to a very specific system, there is always that risk of that system's no longer going to be used. So Wikipedia, people maybe stop using it. Google, people stop using Google and migrate to another search engine. You know, MySpace, Facebook, who knows what's going to be the next system. But what I do think that's not going to change is the internet. There, and it's going to be here. There's going to be some sort of search engine. There's going to be some sort of social media thing. And it's really about using this type of data at a larger level. And as Sarah was pointing out, the types of approaches we can use, I think, are pretty agnostic as to the specific system. So, you know, we could have used the same approach on Google data as Wikipedia data, as Yahoo search query data, as Bing search query data, or if you want to go outside the U.S., Baidu or Yandex, which are a Slavic country search engine and a Chinese search engine website. So what really matters is that I think as internet penetrance continues to proliferate around the world and more people are using it, it's applying these types of methods and seeing how we can build public health tools and systems out of them.
So how far along is this model in terms of its ability to be applied? I mean, is it still in the lab, so to speak?
Yeah, we've have a proof of concept and we tested 14 different disease country pairs, and some of them work, some of them don't work very well. As I mentioned before, countries with low internet penetration don't work very well. For diseases that are very small and very small outbreaks, the current state of our model doesn't really work, but we see that it works for some countries, some diseases, and our goal is to make it better and make it more robust so that for those countries that it didn't work, how we can complement it with additional data so we can make it more robust. And ideally, what we're trying to do is create a web system that's extensible, that can be used by anyone around the world. And I think if people have the ability to contribute to something, they're more likely to trust it. And that's our goal, to create something that anyone can go and import data or import models and see if they can improve the model for forecasting diseases in their particular country or region.
We're huge proponents of these open data and open algorithms, and that's one of the things that really attracts us to Wikipedia. So, for example, the other big systems where these types of approaches have been used on are with Twitter data and Google data. And to get the full access, you can't get full access to that. Twitter is phenomenally expensive to get all the tweets you could possibly want to analyze. Google does not want to make all their data openly available, nor should they. They're businesses and they need to profit off their work. That's how they stay into business, and they just can't be giving it away. But that's what's exciting about Wikipedia, is that it sees itself as a public servant. It is totally aligned with this open data approach, and that's very useful for public health, and I think actually necessary to create a long-term system. And kind of the grand vision that we want all this work to go to, as Sarah was pointing out, is this idea of a global disease forecasting system. And so we want to make disease forecasting much like a weather forecasting system, so that you can see what's it going to be like a week from now, whenever. So
like, let's say we're in some small country where there's a disease outbreak. In whose hands is this forecast? Is this every man, woman, and child with a cell phone is receiving this forecast, or is this something that whatever their Bureau of Public Health is puts out?
I think it's both. Traditional systems have only been able to provide information to hospitals, for example, or clinics. And the public doesn't really necessarily know what's going on in their communities. Most hospitals know what's going on. Most public health departments know what's going on, but the public doesn't know. And so I think we want to be able to reach both the general public and public health departments so that people can take precautionary actions and public health departments can also take actions to utilize resources efficiently.
Different stakeholders will do different things, yeah. And like when you shook our hand today, you said, oh, wait, don't shake my hand. I'm sick with the cold. And so, you know, an individual might see a forecast and do kind of isolation themselves and not try to get people sick. Maybe they'll decide, you know, I'm not going to go to work, or I'm not going to, you know, try to get too close to other people. And public health people will do different things. Maybe they'll say, hey, we need to do a vaccination campaign here and really focus because this seems to be a hot spot. Or, hey, you know, we should do some public awareness in this area about this disease so people know what's going on. So different people will find different uses for the data, but the idea is that we want to put it on a website so that anybody can see that.
Well, I guess that's what I'm wondering. I mean, when you look up your disease, you go to Wikipedia, but when you want to get that information coming toward you, it's not Wikipedia. What is it?
Well, currently we don't have a system online that is pushing out a forecast yet. So there's different things going on here. So when you go to Wikipedia and you look up an article, it gets logged on their servers and they publish this out by the language of the Wikipedia, so for the English Wikipedia, as we mentioned before, as a number of hits per hour per page. So we might get that there is 3,222 views on the flu influenza page in the English Wikipedia. So what we do is we take those kind of hourly data things and build a time series. So then what we would need to do, which we are currently working on, is actually take that and instead of having it internal like on our computers, is actually put that on a website and publish that forecast so people can see it.
So we're building tools that can automate this process, and they can access this data on a hourly or daily basis and provide a forecast for it. I think it's going to vary by disease. We may be able to provide only a week forecast or a month forecast or even further down the line. But right now we are kind of putting all these little pieces together, and we'll hopefully going to release a website soon that can provide a different... It's going to have different diseases that you can look up and by different regions so that...
So it'll be globaldiseaseforecast.com or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah. We await that with bated breath. Now, you have a lot of different kinds of expertise on your team, the mathematical and computational epidemiology team at Los Alamos National Laboratory. And you are, Sarah, a mathematical epidemiologist. You're a molecular biologist, Nicholas. It takes a lot of different kinds of expertise to make something like this happen.
Indeed. We have different types of expertise. So, for example, Reid Prihorsky and Jeffrey Fairchild are computer scientists. Kyle Hickman and myself are mathematicians. Alina Deshpande and Nick Generous are biologists. And so we take our different expertise and to brainstorm and bring this kind of research together.
Sarah Del Valle and Nicholas Generous of Los Alamos National Laboratory, I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.